It's going down right now with the Joe Zabar Podcast. Make sure y'all watch the Joe Zabar Podcast ringing off right now. I am the KID, the Kid Capri. You know what it is. Salute, block party action. Me.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Joe Zabar Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Palacios, and I'm privileged enough to be sitting here with our guest for the week. It's Dr. Jacqueline Jaramillo. Dr. Jacqueline Jaramillo is a recent graduate, just finished defending her dissertation recently, and does a lot of mental health work. Yeah, she is a licensed professional counselor in LPC. Thank you for sitting down with us, Jackie.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, not a problem. No, it's an honor. It's definitely something that I have been trying to, you know, look into as far as having that dialogue about our mental health, specifically coming back out of COVID. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's 2024, 4 years have passed, and sometimes we just want to talk about like it never even happened. I mean, is that something that you're finding quite often?
I am finding so often that clients and people that I see in the community are still getting back to normal and trying to figure out how to interact again. I think that COVID had created such a fear for so many people, and for some it impacted them much more. And I have clients who were thriving and had such a strong community support system, you know, went to the gym, had all these coping skills, community, local coffee shops that they frequented and enjoyed. And COVID completely changed their perspective on engaging within the community.
Yeah, it's very mind-blowing to look at how life has changed in those short amount of 4 years. I know I was recently listening to a conversation in which, you know, how all of this was very much controlled in the sense of, you know, we had things that we wanted to do, and we wanted to trust the experts. We wanted to trust the science, quote unquote, right? But it seems that these individuals were just had a hidden agenda, you know, and it's mind blowing to see that, like, a lot of people, including myself, followed because we trusted the government. We trusted that this is the way, this is the know-how, this is what we got to do. I mean, it's so scary seeing people just drop to the floor because we don't know what's happening.
Right. No, certainly. I think it created a fear and anxiety that was unprecedented before. There was general anxiety that people would experience given, you know, individual circumstances, but this is our entire culture, our worldwide, this high level of fear, this high level of anxiety that continues to affect the way people interact.
Yeah, it was almost like a he versus a them versus us type of thing. It was that mob mentality. Like, if you're not vaccinated, you can't be hanging out with us. Man, there's a lot of people that lost a lot of friends because, you know, they found out, hey, they weren't vaccinated, whatever the case might have been. I mean, it was crazy.
No, I have a close friend of mine who actually had to work through the pandemic, and that created a lot of fear for her because the individuals in her home were telling her if she brought it home, she would be the reason that someone passes away in their family. But look at that pressure, the amount of pressure that she experienced. And unfortunately, they did end up having a family member pass away from complications with COVID. So that just heightened the fear and heightened the responses within that family unit. And it created so much tension and so much pressure for that family that, you know, they have to repair it. And here we are several years later, and they're still working through some of that emotional repair.
Yeah, man. Families affected. I mean, households affected. And what if that's the only amount? What if those are the only people that you can count on because you have no friends? Like, you have you're completely out of individuals to count on, I would assume.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, COVID had a pretty interesting effect on our family. I mean, we are all very close. We're a pretty tight-knit Hispanic family. And it changed our next steps. And my dad invested in some land, and our entire family developed our own homestead. We're on 92 acres, and we've got our chickens, and we're getting some other animals, and we essentially have our space. And of course, we're not far from town, so we're able to kind of get the best of both worlds, but maintain some of those boundaries. And so that it created some angst there that prompted that for some of my family, and of course I was on board to join in and be with them. So it certainly changed the course of life for a lot of folks.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think if you never thought about doomsday prepping, you started thinking about doomsday prepping. In a sense of like, you know what, if worst case scenario hits, is me and my family ready? Can we get up and go? You know what I'm saying? You mentioned like you have some animals and so forth, and man, like that's you're taking it back. I mean, you're taking it back to the old school. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, and unfortunately we had a full garden, so that we can really thrive doing all of our own things. And we're still working through some of that. But, you know, we're always talking about what will we need to do to prepare if something hits. And I think that's a constant conversation that a lot of families have. And I feel like we had a lot of these conversations much earlier because of COVID. I remember during COVID, and this was a big pressure on me because I was still seeing clients at the time. You know, my mom came home and said, "Hey, have you completed your five wishes?" So, five wishes is like a legal document that you can go through and put all, you know, your wishes in the case of your death. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm not thinking of death right now. Like this isn't a thing. And they said, you know, Jackie, you're a single mom. You got to start thinking about these things. And I, you know, how do you take that when you're young and you still have so much? And the conversation around the dinner table is, what does your will say? And are you good? And I think that created a lot of anxieties that people, and actually can be somewhat traumatic for a lot of people.
Yeah, especially if you've never thought about death. Oh my God. I have to come to the realization that life is finite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So this five wishes thing, is a Colorado thing?
I don't know if it's a Colorado thing. I'll have to take a look. I know that a lot of doctors' offices offer it, and we talk about it for my work if anyone's ever interested. But it's like five wishes that you would want, like your home and just how you'd want things allocated should something happen to you. And, you know, I never thought anything of it until, like, the unfortunate happened. I was in the middle of writing a paper for one of my doctoral courses, and I get this call and message that one of my closest friends was in the hospital. And, you know, we're hearing everything about COVID. This was not COVID related. She was very young. And I think she had just turned 40. And she ended up passing away within like 2 days of that phone call. And like between COVID and everything else, like there were signs everywhere that our time is finite, and you know, how do we wish to spend it?
Yeah. So this friend of yours, she passed within 48 hours, within 2 days after being diagnosed. Yeah. Wow. Does she have a family?
She did. And so, her name was Raina, and, she was someone that I worked very closely with. She was a school assistant principal. Mm-hmm. And, she actually had a headache that wouldn't go away. So she went to get it checked, and it was a stroke, and then it prompted multiple strokes. And they had a diagnosis at the time of something, and I can't even remember right now. But that was, she had her husband and her son. And, you know, it was very quick.
Wow.
And I think it's just a reminder of our mortality.
Wow. Is this the first time you've spoken about, like, about her and her life?
You know, it's so hard because, she and I was in like my early 20s, and she and I were working together, and, she was the assistant principal, and I was working as a school counselor at the time. Mm-hmm. And she and I were sitting there talking about, hey, you know what? It'd be so cool to go for our doctorate in our respective fields. And she, at the time, we both had different things where it just wasn't the time. And so when I started my program, she started just a couple months later. And so she was on that track with me. Okay. Like we were doing this together. And, she passed away. If my memory serves me correctly, she passed away about 2 weeks before my second residency, where I met you. and it was then that I actually shifted some focus to really focus on school administrators at the time because of my historical conversations with her.
Right.
But certainly this is probably the first time outside of conversations at home that I've had about Raina and losing her during that time.
Well, I mean, I'll say this much for what it's worth. I think, you finishing up recently and kudos to you on finishing up recently your dissertation. I mean, I know it's a long process, and it's something that definitely deserves a lot of celebration. You know, if you're not about celebrating, but I would definitely say, like, man, hey, shout out to Raina, wherever you're at, you know, that, you know, your homegirl did it, you know what I'm saying? And I'm sure she's up there celebrating with you for sure. But, that's definitely hard. It's takes a toll on anybody. And so how do you deal with stuff like that? How does one cope with loss? How does one cope with, you know, these crucial conversations that I feel need to be had, right?
You know, everyone copes differently. And grief is one of those really funny things where nobody goes through the grief process or the grief cycle the same. I think back to even my first big loss, and that was my grandmother back in 2009. I don't think I actually processed her passing for like 1 to 2 years. Because I was so busy with other things and trying to, I'm very much a caretaker. And so in my family, I was supporting keeping everyone else afloat. And when that kind of settled and calmed, the grief process was delayed for me because of that. And, you know, over the years, and when I work with clients, when we talk about grief and, you know, the 5 stages of grief, it's always interesting because a smell, a song, a TV show, anything can trigger a really positive memory, and anything can trigger like a negative memory.
Right.
And then how we express our emotions with that is all very dependent on the person. And when we're talking about coping, I think I always really focus on, you know, if you're having some of those emotions, really feel them and try to understand them instead of pushing them down. I think it's very easy to push certain emotions away, particularly if you don't like those emotions. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, how many people really like feeling like crap? You know?
A lot of people. You know, I joke, but it's crazy because sometimes I'll walk in and I'm like, hey, Jackie, how's it going? How you doing? You doing all right? Well, you know, it's another Thursday, almost closer to Friday. And I'm like, yo. Well, thank you for reminding me which day of the week it is, right? But, God, man, like, energy drainers, I swear. But you know.
Energy vampires.
Yeah, and it's a real thing. Like, the thing is, the question is, how do we get past these individuals, right? And the more and more I go looking for things, I find things. And I'm just like, it's a lot of people, man. But then the question I pose is, like, why is a good majority of the people like that?
I think the better question would be, what happened to where they have a hard time experiencing joy? Because
finances.
Yeah. Everything we do, we go through life, and there are so many things that can stress us. And I think a more appropriate question would be, you know, what happened that you're not able to experience joy right now? It's Friday. It's Thursday. You know what? It's a day. And you're right. So many people are doom and gloom and angsty, right? They experience that consistent angst. And the truth is, we've had so much happened. Heck, in my generation, we've had doom and gloom consistently, right? Everyone was panicked in fear about Y2K, and then you have 9/11, and then you have all of these things that just consistently happened. And we're just supposed to pretend and keep going. And that's a global thing. What about what's happening in our daily life? We're dealing with work stress. We're dealing with financial stress. We're dealing with relationships. We're dealing with our families. We're dealing with, as adults, how are we getting our own needs met while still trying to take care of everything else? I mean, that's a really tough conversation, because how often do we allow joy to come into our lives when we can always find something to stress about?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, you know, I my biggest model of how to deal with things is going to be my mother. And what I have found was that she loves to laugh, and laughter is her medicine. Now, one of the things that I have done quite well in my existence has also been turning situations and tough conversations into okay conversations through laughter, through finding ways of how we can laugh at it. And I think that's what comedy does so well. Comedy, you know, if we don't take offense to it, we know we're going to go have a laugh. Like, you already know. So you should not take offense to it. But we have those vampire killers. We have those individuals. Oh, man, it's well, just another comedy show. Oh, this guy sucks. You know, like,
I'll tell you, like, something that we've always done for coping. Two big things have always been great for me. One is exercise and getting fresh air. But two, I love music. That's something that has always been something big for me. And everyone around me knows, like, oh my goodness, she's singing again. And when I was younger, I would be that one that you just wanted to shut up, because I would just run around the house and like sing everything at the top of my lungs. And I really didn't care if it was on key. Like, sometimes it was on key, but most of the time it wasn't. And that was so cathartic. And you can tell now, every once in a while, when we're driving or when we're doing different things, I'll throw different music on. And I think one of my favorite ones is the old hip hop song, It's Tricky, right?
I don't know. Who's that one by?
Oh my goodness.
I'm kidding. Well, Run DMC.
Right. Yes. And so I put it on and, you know, rap as if I know all the words. And act really silly with my 8-year-old. My 2-year-old is still kind of trying to figure out that mom's a little wacky sometimes. But my 8-year-old will be wacky with me. And that is always a sight to see. Uh-huh. And every once in a while, he'll be like, Mom. And I'm like, what? We're experiencing joy right now, child. Like, here we are. And I think we need more moments where we have an opportunity to just release.
Yeah, I think you're right on. You're right on key right there. No pun intended. But I really feel that exploring moments and creating a moments is something that we fail to do. Because we're so consumed with, man, tomorrow I gotta make some money so that I can pay that bill, or else they're gonna shut off the light. You know, like, we get this anxiety built up because of certain things, and it's relatable to everybody, you know. But what's not relatable is the forgiveness of the loans, because not a lot of people can get meet those requirements. Forgiveness of your debts. You know, and I think that's where we start building frustration, where there's always something that we read that big corporations take advantage of, but it does not, individuals like you and I cannot meet those expectations to have the same outcome. And you have this boiling pot that is just waiting for the water to come out. And I think we hit it already. I think we hit it in 2020, especially with the whole movements that were happening when George Floyd happened, when Black Lives Matter happened. There was just so much pipes that were broken, that bursted, that it was just, it was going to happen. And now, mm-hmm. and now we're dealing with, okay, where do we go from here? How do we move forward?
I think that's a tough question because so many people were affected by different things and trying to figure out how we all fit. I think a big movement in all of COVID and everything else was the Great Resignation. So many people were recognizing their unhappiness from day to day. And that life was so short that, you know what, I'm not going to work for an organization like this. And so we saw a lot of movement with employment. We saw a lot of people starting to take different approaches. Do you remember all that?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, I actually lived it. And so, yeah, man, I mean, I think it was definitely one of those things where, like, you either sink or swim type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to survive? I really feel like we were, like, on this huge audition for Survivor.
I started laughing. I think at one point I was like, this is Darwinism at its finest, right?
Yeah. Who's gonna be the last person standing? I mean, it was so crazy. Even now, man, I remember being like, hey, you gotta get the jab. You gotta get this Johnson & Johnson vaccine or the Moderna. If not, you're not gonna be with us anymore. You know, we have to have all our organization vaccinated. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wanted to make the money, you had the money, and you were just like, okay, well, I guess I'm gonna get jabbed. I mean, what's there to lose, right? Now,
mm-hmm.
now we're 4 years down the road from getting vaccinated, and we're like, okay, well, there might be some type of correlation with some type of cancer. Oh man, I mean, hindsight is 20/20, but you don't know
no.
in the moment.
No, and I think we try to put our trust in individuals who, quote unquote, know the predictability, they know what's going on, they have experience in some of these things. And the truth is, I think everything that occurred was so spontaneous to where things were happening quicker than they can predict it.
Yeah.
And it kept us locked down longer, kept everything at a close.
It was so crazy. I mean, I'm just talking about these experiences because I hadn't talked about these experiences. And it's crazy because we're not the only ones. The whole world was affected by it. It was daunting. I remember seeing it first happening pop up in, where was it, in Spain?
Mm-hmm.
And there was this
Spain and Italy.
Spain and Italy, yeah, yeah. And then Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, nah, this ain't going to come over here. Nah, it happened. Hey, guess what? There were some people that boarded the plane, and they were coming from China. And they were like, what? Oh, my God. And they infected mm-hmm. these people. What? Oh, it can't be like that. It can't be that quick. Oh, man.
But I think, you know, when I think back to that, I also think back to those videos of everyone like in Spain, and they were all on their balconies and they were singing and they were playing music and trying to find a sense of community at a time when community was taken from them. And it just shows that there can be those silver lining pieces and how powerful, like, different things are, like music. And how powerful it is to still maintain some sense of camaraderie, even in those times that really suck.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. The silver lining in all of this is is individuals reaching out. I mean, do you remember the karaoke shows and the comedy shows on through Zoom? Like there was stuff going on. Oh, send me a tip. Use my Cash App. You can tip me here. And like here we were having drinks, if we had drinks, at our house, you know, enjoying these piano bars, but through Zoom, through Facebook Lives, and it was a very crazy time, extremely crazy. But the people that didn't have a day off were the hospital workers, the doctors, the nurses. You know, like not so. So think about these people that were the ones that were out there. How much PTSD do you think they have?
I'm so sorry, you just cut out.
I said, think of these people and just how much PTSD do you think they have?
I think that they experienced so much trauma over that time that there is almost like a compounding of traumatic events to where some of them were just trying to get their basic needs met, you know, trying to get enough sleep, trying to get enough hydration, enough food to make it through that time. So it becomes this huge moment of survival, but also there was a big need almost to detach and dissociate from some of the situations in real time. When we're talking about PTSD, we're talking about a past event. They were living the trauma for months on end. Like, it was like, I'm going to go home for a couple hours, get a bit of rest, and then turn around and go live the trauma all over again. And so I imagine now that we're several years down the way that they may start to see some of those PTSD signs and symptoms now more so than ever. But I'd be interested into, you know, how many of them are still, you know, our hospital workers and everyone else, their mental health was greatly affected in real time during that moment. It was almost like they didn't have the appropriate support to effectively debrief and go and really deal with a lot of those things as they were experiencing it. And how often, and I feel like I saw it all the time, medical workers were so affected mentally by everything that was going on, they didn't survive it.
Nah, man. I go back to like an image in my mind that I remember seeing. And it was this nurse who was just trying to get like a breather in between shifts, and she's just breaking down and so forth. And like, the reality is that, and I think I read the that she posted that image, which she kind of like played the role to show what she was observing. Not that it was in that, not that somebody took that picture in the moment. It was planned like that, to show that. And so then she caught like some backlash afterwards because like, well, why are you acting that way if that's not the reality? Like, it's one of these things where, like, the society that we live in right now really compounds to the amount of mental anguish that people feel, because you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no right way to put it other than
it is what it is. Well, and look at, we are able, everyone has their own experiences, and, like, that person was vulnerable and allowed what she was experiencing out. And instead of finding compassion or grace in that moment, she was met with shame and guilt and hatred and, you know, hurtful statements. And who's going to want to be vulnerable after that?
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Like we, it's so crazy because again, we've already coined the term of vampire, drainers,
energy vampires,
energy vampires, right? But the world knows them as Karens and Darrens. You know, no shot to anybody named as a Karen or somebody who's named a Darren, but that's just what it is. Like, there's just a lot of those people out there who, for whatever reason, are not joyful in their life. and I'm sorry to say, but that's just it's a large majority. It's crazy.
Absolutely. And I talk about this all the time when it comes, you know, when we have certain belief systems, whether it's, oh, we believe someone's out to get us, or we believe the world's out to get us, you will find everything in your power to confirm that bias, right? And so, you know, someone cut you off in traffic, you know, they meant to do that. You know, you drop something and then it gets kicked up across the room and now you've lost it and everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Well, now you've just found every reason to be even more pissed off. And unfortunately, that's what we all do at certain points in our lives. And the bad part is when that becomes such a cycle that there's nothing that's broken it, that you're just going through and so many things just confirm it. It keeps you there. It keeps you down. And that's a part of that cycle that is incredibly difficult. And how, I can't tell you how often I work with people who they get into these cycles where it's like doomsday every day. And because of that, they're agitated toward people in the community. They're frustrated so easily. And realistically, they're stuck. They're stuck and something in their life has told them that, you know what, you belong to be in this stuck place. And it almost takes creating that awareness, oh my goodness, this is actually, it's happening and I'm contributing to it. Because I think a lot of times we think, for all the Karens and Darrens out there that, that, you know, they're just angry with the world. Well, the truth is they probably have experienced some really difficult crap. And so everything in their life may confirm that for them and reinforce that belief system.
Yeah. You know, and it's, I mean, how much help really is there to make it better for them? For what it's worth, man, I think, you know, as community members, we want our communities mm-hmm. to thrive. We want to be able to have some fun times, man. We want to be able to say, hey, yeah. man, we got more than a freaking car wash in our community. You know what I'm saying? Like, come check us out, you know, and our people are awesome. Our people are great. But, mm-hmm. but man, like, how great are our schools? How great are our established healthcare systems? How great is our infrastructure? You know what I'm saying? Like, if we don't have that reflective analysis to see mm-hmm. where we stand as a community, then we're constantly shifting the blame somewhere else.
Right.
So, man, and that continues to add to the mental health aspect of it all. You know what I'm saying? Like we try to find an answer as to why these people feel a certain way, but it's their experiences for sure. I'm 100% in agreement.
Well, and the truth is, I mean, we could sit here and, you know, it's not really fair to, like, we can hypothesize all day on why someone experiences what they experience, but the truth is, if we had an opportunity to really focus in, you know, how am I treating others? How am I connecting with myself today? How am I, and really focus on those pieces that we have opportunity to impact and control. And, you know, we have opportunity to create change within ourselves so that we can spread that joy. We can share that with others. And if we fall into that negative cycle, that negative thought cycle, then, you know, that's just contributing to the greater issue there. And so we have so much power when we are willing to take it back and understand that we have the capacity for joy and we have the capacity for so much. And I think of, you and I both went through the doctoral process at the same time, and the level of anxiety that comes through various parts of it, right? And it is so hard when you get stuck in that negative cycle. How close were you to just saying, you know what, screw it, I'm done. I'm not going to do this.
All the time.
Because, but like, what type of anxiety were you experiencing in those moments?
I was experiencing, like, thank you for asking. I was experiencing people beating around the bush. And I understand it from an organizational standpoint. Where I don't understand it is from a peer-to-peer. Just be real with me. Like, help me understand, man. Like, just tell me the way it is, man. That's all I need to know.
Right.
That's all I need to know. You know, pull the curtain back a little bit and just tell me, hey, Jay, you do this, this happens. You do that, that happens. Cause and effect, right? Like, it's as simple as that. Where I start having issues is where people start getting in their feelings. Well, I think that this is going to happen, and I feel that this is going to happen. Truth of the matter is, I don't give a fuck how you think or feel. I just need to know what steps need to be taken so that this can happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that's where a lot of people get lost in the sauce a lot of times, and then they're like, man, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to deal with this. Well, the fact of the matter is you have a choice. You know what I'm saying? And I remember I went through two chairs. The first chair that I went through, she was having a medical issue, so she couldn't be my chair. The second chair, again, and this is just my opinion, I felt my second chair was a narcissist. And I could not deal with somebody who had that type of mentality. And I simply asked to get a third one, and luckily third was a charm for me, because my third chair was just very, look, Jay, this is the way it is, this is what's going to happen, this is all you got to do, boom, 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 boom. We knocked it out. You know what I'm saying? But I think if you don't know how to deal with people like that, you're going to get lost.
Well, absolutely. So, you know, when we're talking about mental health, right? How much did all of that change affect your mental health in that process?
I think there was definitely a shift in my dealing with certain situations. I had to make a shift from taking things personal to just understanding the process for what it is and walking away. That definitely helped me out tremendously. In other words, the person I was in 2020 through 2021 is not the same person that I am right now in 2024. I don't take things personal anymore. Like, at this point, if you want to say that 2 + 2 = 5, go right ahead. I'm not gonna entertain that conversation.
Yeah. So it had an impact on you, because now it sounds like you had a paradigm shift in how you saw the world and how you saw some of these situations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So in that process, you said the person you were in 2020, 2021 is not the same. And so, like, if we wanted to bring that back around, you know, 2020 was COVID. And I know when I met you, when we were at residency, we had to wear masks. We had to stay away from everybody. And, like, how much do you think working on the doctorate at the same time as we're having this huge pandemic and trying to figure out what life looks like after the pandemic, how do you think that transformed who you are and your mental health?
You know, I think it allowed me to be more empathetic. I feel that once I understood empathy a little bit on a grander scale, it allowed me to deal with people and have a lot more patience, you know, understanding that life is finite also, you know, raised my awareness to be more patient at best. Because, you know, I come from the coaching of Dr. Eric Thomas, who says, how bad do you want it? If you want it as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful. And so you come from that mindset of like, okay, Jay, you don't want it bad enough. You know, how bad do you want it? Like it was to the point where I was just competing with myself over and over and over again. I'm at this, I got this, I got that. But, you know, sometimes you got to stop and smell the roses. Sometimes you got to say, sabes que, I'm going to entertain myself a little bit over here.
But see, I think you bring up a good point, and it's something that I've dealt with most of my life is, you know, when it comes to achieving a goal, there is that mindset of, you know, don't let anything get in the way, you just got to do it. And then talking bad to yourself as a part of a motivator because you're not meeting it. And years ago, I was working on training. At the time, I was training for a half marathon, and then I shifted into training for a bodybuilding show. And I remember I was in the middle of a run, and I just started saying because I come from a very, very similar mindset in how I was raised and how I perceived myself in the world. Like, I'm going to achieve everything I want. And I was like, come on, Jackie. And I was using self-talk, but not in the best way. And I realized when that self-talk shifted from motivating to becoming like an internalization of negativity, we had to make some changes. And I had to make a complete paradigm shift for myself that of what I can do versus motivating myself in other ways. And I think that over that time, I had to learn. And I feel like, and this was from probably 2016 to 2019, I had this energy, this persistence, and I still have it today. It just looks a little bit different, but this energy and persistence to achieve and accomplish. And I've had it my entire life, but this part was different because I was in the middle of a really toxic relationship and, you know, going through divorce, moving countries, all kinds of things. And I've always been of the mindset that you always have two choices. And it kind of goes back to the tale of two wolves. You are, and the life you have is based off of which wolf you're going to feed. You can feed the one that thrives on guilt and shame and fear and anger, or you can feed the wolf that brings joy and happiness and beauty to the world, right? And initially I was using language that I thought was supposed to be motivating, and it wasn't. It wasn't actually fueling the right fire. And so that completely had a full transformation reframe for me, to where, is what I'm saying or is what I'm doing fueling the fire? And that is a constant self-evaluation and reflective tool that I've used for so long, because it's very easy to internalize the negative, and it's very easy to get pulled into one of those negative cycles that we were talking about earlier. And so that's one of the tools that I really like to use and look at. What does this information, what am I fueling right now? And if it's not productive, why am I going to continue down that path? But sometimes it's easy and sometimes not to make that change.
Let me ask you this.
Right?
So,
sure.
So when you had all this opportunity to go ahead and achieve certain things, and you have that internal voice that is constantly fueling you, who or what did that voice sound like?
So you'll have to repeat it because you were cutting out.
Yeah. That voice that is constantly fueling you. And I'm talking about the voice that you said you had and you still mm-hmm. have it. Who does it sound like?
It's me.
It's you.
It's me talking to me.
Okay. Because mm-hmm. mine is my mom entirely, all the time.
So it used to be my dad. Okay. So it used to be my dad. And then at one point it had shifted to, I feel like it is all, it's me, because it is all of the things that I had internalized from my childhood, from my adolescence, from teachers, from everyone that had ever influenced me, whether it was, now, my dad was tough, okay? He was a Marine. He wanted me to be tough. He wanted me to take life by the horns and go. And he taught me a lot of things that have sat in the back of my mind. But then I also think of things that I heard from teachers, things that I heard from coaches. I've been a lifelong athlete. So what have I heard from coaches? What have I heard from different people? And I have basically taken all of this information, and the voice now is me. Mm-hmm. At one point, you know what? You're probably right. It was my dad. It was my grandmother, it was my mom, it was it was that ex-boyfriend that told me that I would never amount to anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that family member who said education was a waste of money and a waste of time. It was all of those things. And I shifted it and created my own voice around and changed the conversation and reframed it to where it became more motivating. And so people ask me all the time now, how do you, like, what motivates you? You know, what keeps your spirits up? What, you know, all of these things. And I'm not greatly influenced a lot of times by, like, external things. It's all internal, and the things that I say for myself. And I realize, like, not everybody does that, and not everybody can do that, and it's different for everyone. But for me, I have this, like, insatiable drive for everything that I look at and everything that I do. And so when we're talking about, like, positive reframe and, like, that voice in my head, that voice has transformed to where it's me. it's me telling myself, and you know, that I can do this, that, you know what, you don't have to fail right now. And you know, I use failure as a motivator now. Like, okay, I failed. Why did I fail? What is, what goes next? And that's a whole different mindset than me at 20 or me at 16. It's completely different. But, you know, me at 16 was a very angry child, like angry teenager.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of things going on in my family that completely changed. It's how I would say it changed the course of my life, to where now not only do I have, I went after, got my master's in counseling and work as an LPC, but now finishing my doctorate as a performance psychologist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like everything was building blocks and shifting to where I am now.
Yeah, it's definitely a talking piece. It's definitely a self-reflective analysis that we have to have, especially us that we like to understand our, I guess, our decision making, our choices that we have on a daily basis. Now I have a voice, and the voice that I hear now is my daughter's. It shifted from my mom to my daughter. Because as you mentioned earlier, like, it's very easy to go into that negative mindset of like talking to yourself, which can be what you perceive to be motivating, but it's also self-deprecating. And when I, you know, I'll jokingly say some things, you know, to my daughter, and my daughter's like, "Dad, stop." You know, she's like, "Yo, pump the brakes.
Mm-hmm.
You need to calm down, chill out." And I'm like, no, I gotta go. Like, you know, and she's like, "Dad, it's gonna be okay." You know, it's crazy because, you know, like, as parents, we don't understand how much we influence our kids. But the reality is that they're watching every single second, every single thing that you say, everything. They're watching it all. They're watching it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But my biggest fear is the world they're living in, where it could be very toxic real quick. True or not, man, that girl, what's her name? The Hawktua girl. Have you heard about this?
I have, you know, I've seen a couple things like relating back to like Missy Elliott, but I don't understand the origins of it. I don't,
you know,
I have no reference.
She's blown up the internet. She broke the internet all over again, man. I swear, you know.
So you're gonna have to fill me in because I feel like I've completely missed out on this part of pop culture.
Oh man, just go to your TikTok, go to your any social media, and just type in Hawktua, and she's gonna pop out. And it's this interview thing, format, platform that's going on while people are out partying and so forth. And she's being interviewed by this one guy. She's with her friend. And, you know, like, the conversation goes back to, like, he poses a question of, like, well, how do you keep a man happy? Or something to that effect. And she goes, well, you know, you got to do that Hawktua. And then, and you know, it's real sexual in nature, right? And she just blew up. She just blew up. And so there's this report that is circulating the realm of social media that is saying that she was a preschool teacher and she lost her job and she got fired. I just read that's fake news, misinformation. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Like, the world that we live in is now with candidates such as that are over 80 years old, you know, like, that are saying that news that you trusted before is fake news. You know, there's tweets that are out there that are just very, very, very skewed. You know, and that's what I'm saying. Like that's the world we live in now, and how will it affect our children? They can post whatever, and it's out there, and now you're defending yourself in the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
So
that is true.
So, how the mental health issues are going to be rampant, in my opinion.
I think that the kids, heck, my kid, 8 years old, and he asked me the other day for, he's like, Mom, can I get a YouTube channel? Like, I want my own channel, like those videos. And I was like, why? You know? And he's like, come on, Mom, like, I could totally do this. And, like, I'm not ready for that conversation, mainly because he's 8 years old. And he, you know, our kids are exposed to so much bullying and hate. And and on the latter, they're also exposed to, like, cheers and people championing them on. And it's understanding the difference. And sometimes kids just aren't there yet. They're still so fragile. And not saying that that has to be for everyone. And like I said, this is my opinion, but the bad part is everyone's exposed and their lives are there. And I think this is such a tough piece because I have seen youth mental health greatly impacted by social media in a negative way. I have rarely seen social media or that public scrutiny end well. Most of the time, I had a friend at one point, one that I had mentored for a very long time, and I think she was early to mid 20s, and she was having a hard time with it. She had to take all apps off of her phone, take away all access, because her mental health, she went from thriving and happy and bubbly, and she started having anxiety, panic attacks, you know, experiencing some pretty intense, I would say depressive episodes. She tried to self-medicate with, like, with weed and with alcohol, with friendships. She was engaging with some friends that just weren't healthy. And totally, she's not in that place anymore. She's really on a really great path of healing. But I think there's such a balance. There's such a balance, and there's a lot of anxiety that can be created in some of those situations.
Oh yeah.
With the level of scrutiny that exists.
Oh yeah. And you know, like, for you to say that you're not ready to have that conversation with your child as well, it's, you will know when to have that conversation. I mean, there's nobody to tell you when and how, but
I mean, we have conversations about it all the time.
Yeah.
But
where I was going with it is just this. Check this out. I remember having that same conversation with my children. We're 8 years old, but I was kind of guiding it as well. And we were doing like the package openings and the reaction videos, but it went nowhere. Mm-hmm. It went nowhere because, you know, I kind of stopped it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I got a job. I got stuff that I got to do, but.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something to be said about individuals who take it to heart, and that's what they want to do. Case in point, so, Mr. Beast. Are you familiar with Mr. Beast?
No, I feel completely out of my element with some of this because I've been so far. I will tell you, I kind of limit myself as well because.
So check this out.
You know,
this
please kid, educate me.
This kid is 24 years old, right? And I still call him a kid because he's been around the game for about a good 13 years. But he grew up in this whole area of YouTube. So much so that he's the number one YouTuber in the world. If he drops a video today, that video easily is going to get 3 million views. Right. And so, and so he's already discovered a way to make money by making videos. And his whole thing was, whatever money I generate from my video content, I'm going to reinvest it back into the videos. So that was his whole scheme. That was his whole game plan. He was 11 years old, and he started analyzing the data points that was being offered to him through YouTube. The data analytics of like, okay, this is the amount of likes, this is the amount of clicks, this is the amount of engagement, etc. And so like his mind started shifting to like, okay, how do I increase it? How do I increase it? And so he started toying with like, well, maybe I'll change the color of shirts that they're wearing. Maybe I'll make it a little bit longer. Maybe I'll give it more clips as opposed to this clips. You know what I'm saying? Like little things that he was modifying, he started understanding there's an increase. Oh, wait, there's a drop. So let's take this out. Let's remove this. And so he created a masterclass of his own in his room.
Well, and while you've been talking, I did a quick background search just to kind of see. And while he's certainly a strategist, and I think to that end, absolutely brilliant in how do we compound this? How do we, you know, that's a constant evaluation. Yeah. You're constantly taking in analytics. You're constantly evaluating trends. You're constantly having to be, you know, come up with the content that supports those trends. And to that end, brilliant.
Amazing.
And
amazing.
Absolutely.
So and what I want to add to is, what has he done with his platform? Like this kid, and I still call him a kid, but he's far beyond his, he's amazing. Look, you talk about a government, and we try to trust our government because we want them to include or to take care of its constituents, right? Provide us equitable healthcare, provide us equitable education, provide us transportation, infrastructure, etc. Well, these, you know, where do we go wrong is when we elect individuals who have to raise funds to go ahead and run their campaign, right? Well, guess what? You took money from Jackie, you took money from Jay, and now you feel that you owe Jackie and Jay, right? So if Jackie or Jay were to ever call you, you're going to drop everything that you're doing just to appease them because, hey, guess what? You're going to run in 4 more years and you would like to have another donation, et cetera. In other words, you're bound to the people that donated to your platform, right? Well, this kid is not bound to anybody. And what he has done, like, I'll give you two examples and I'll stop talking about Mr. Beast, right? he took 1,000 participants who were having trouble with their eyesight, got them doctors, got them, got their vision fixed at no cost to them. Just, hey, I helped them out by getting their vision back. Number two, running water is an issue in Africa. This dude decided to build 100 wells in Africa and provide running sustainable water for these areas in Africa. Like without even blinking an eye, like, let's just get it done. Wow. Like,
yeah,
there's still good people out there.
No, there's good people with great hearts. And I think that, you know, one thing I hear all the time about my hometown is how negative it is. And my first response to most people when they want to start going down the negative, you know, I can't change their experiences.
Right.
But what I can say is there are still some really beautiful people, and there are going to be shitty people everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be people who are negative, and there are going to be people who just aren't delightful to be around.
We call them energy vampires. Yeah.
Energy vampires. And it is up to us to find those glimmers of light. And a friend of mine, she passed away last year, and she used to call them shimmers. And she would be, her favorite thing was like, how are you shimmering? How are you shimmering today? Yeah. And and she was probably one of the most delightful people, but she experienced her own mental health issues.
Yeah.
Right? She had such challenges that she wanted people to shine, and she wanted people to see how they can give light to the world, because she has seen the darkness. And so she was always looking for the light, always. And I think if, you know, we talk about like, how are you shimmering, and how are you like showing that, yeah, it completely changes it. And I think, you know, I didn't know those things about Mr. Beast. I got to read up on him very quickly. and my son has talked about him, but I didn't know those things. And, but that just shows you that, you know, I'm sure that I could probably look up something, and all the good things that he's done is not as highlighted as maybe like a video that was controversial that he did.
Yeah.
Right. And I think societally and within our culture on a grander scale, people are kind of excited by the negative.
Well, because it pays, you know, and mm-hmm. there's no reward for being a good person and being nice. There's no monetary gift that you can receive for just being a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Like really, newspapers, they sell. And the one thing that you'll learn in journalism school is if it bleeds, it leads. Right?
Yeah.
TMZ.
Yeah.
I mean, they make a killing because they're giving you the cheese meal of Hollywood right away. Right? Like it's crazy. People want the chisme. People want the gossip. And that's what sells papers. You know, like that's how wrong we are in society. You know, we don't highlight the good. Like, I mean, let's go back to like when you were in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember like the valedictorian or the salutatorian by chance?
No.
Do you remember the kid that got in a fight?
I was friends with all of them. those are my people.
We hood so... like that. We hood.
So, I mean... I didn't really.
You get what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Man, that's what I'm saying. That's what's wrong with us. We're apes. We are apes. Man, let me save $1,000 so that I can feed my family. Nah, I'd rather put it on GameStop. We're apes.
Oh my goodness.
It's crazy, man.
It's always interesting.
It really is, the way we think. I mean, it's Darwinism at its best. I'm telling you, it's so crazy. Who's going to be the lone survivor at the end? But hey, Jackie, thank you so much for dropping on in. And I definitely, you know, you're more than welcome to come in for another episode. We'll definitely get this going another time. I really appreciate the time that you gave us. Oh, one thing I did find out that I completely forgot to mention. Did you know mm-hmm. about 988?
I did. did.
I just found that out right now, today. I had no idea about it. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. We can chat about it for a bit.
No, like, what is it? Just tell me what it is and how beneficial it is to the people.
Okay. So 988 is a suicide and crisis lifeline. And it doesn't matter where you are in the country, or it has 24/7 care. There are individuals on the other side that will talk with you, talk you through a crisis. If you're feeling lonely, if you're feeling suicidal, if you're feeling just over mounting stress in a crisis, they are there for you. And I can't tell you how great they are as a resource. It is relatively newer over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it has not been publicized as much as I probably would hope. I think that there's a lot of hope that individuals would connect locally with like local resources and local crisis centers. But if you don't know, you can call, you can text it, you can chat. There's so many different ways that you can connect through 988 if you're in that psychological distress and that mental health space where you're considering hurting yourself, or you're even just thinking, life is too hard.
Yeah.
And if you get to that place, 988 is an excellent resource, and it's for everyone.
All right. Dr. Jaramillo, thank you so much for dropping on in. I really appreciate this time. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of information on that 988. I'm definitely going to blast it out. There's something that, again, I had no idea it existed, but it came into creation in these past 2 years, and it's something that will definitely be beneficial to anybody and everybody in the United States. So hopefully the word, if you don't know about it, check it out. Dr. Jaramillo, appreciate you. Thank you so much for dropping on in. All right. We'll see you next time.
All right, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Have a great one.